This is Ken McLeod. Thousands of people around the world listen to these podcasts every week, just as you are doing now. If you find them helpful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate. Your generosity helps us maintain and expand the website for the benefit of yourself and other practitioners worldwide. Thank you, and enjoy this podcast.
Unfettered Mind. Mind Training. Santa Fe Retreat. Part 11.
Work is resting in the field. Doing that for a while, you'll develop a capacity and attention which you can start opening to what's inside. And even at the stage of the field, you can still work to a certain extent with the sense of balance and noticing imbalances. Listen. Well, I'm going to step back and give a larger picture answer, which will, I hope, include an answer to your particular question. One method of practice, and the method of practice that I rely on principally in working with you and in my own practice, is resting attention in experience. And in doing this, one's capacity in attention gradually increases, because you keep coming back in attention, keep coming back in attention. And as that capacity of attention increases, the energy of the attention penetrates more deeply into patterns. And as the energy penetrates into patterns, then you begin to experience what's there, which is often confusing, disturbing, distracting, dulling, any of those typical reactions, pattern material. Another way, which some traditions and some individuals use, is to use methods to develop significantly higher states of attention than one ordinarily has. And in those higher states, or more higher energy states, that also penetrates into the pattern material. But you may or may not have an ongoing capacity in attention to handle what is being stirred up or being brought up by that. So a typical example of this, for instance, whether it's still going on with a primal scream, where it used somewhat artificial technique to develop a high level of energy and stir stuff up, and people would have these dramatic experiences. But it was an open question whether they could work with that material afterwards. So, in response to Dan's question in particular, this approach, both the classical approach and the approach that I introduced, only what you have a capacity and attention to experience will actually emerge into awareness. And as you experience that with all of its ups and downs and ins and outs and turmoil and everything like that, then and actually experience, then it releases. Then the energy that was locked up in that now becomes available for attention, and one can start penetrating the next layer, which is, I think, what you're talking about, the other that you were not aware of initially. And so it goes down layer by layer, and it's the old analogy of peeling the layers off an onion. And this, to me, is a balanced and reasonably safe approach to practice. And having worked with both, I've found that, because in the retreat we were given energy transformation techniques which are very powerful, unless you have a corresponding ongoing capacity of attention, i.e. mindfulness, weird stuff starts happening. And I definitely come to appreciate, at least for myself, that working in a balanced way across all fronts produces better results than trying to go a long way in one area. So is that okay? Other questions? You can. Yes. And how was that? What does it want? No. I mean, yes, but that reply is never specific enough for a practice purpose. And how do you know what somebody wants? That's one way. Didn't ask. Well, maybe you should try that. Pardon? Oh, I think it'll probably be back. Yeah. And but sometimes when you ask somebody, you know, what do you want? They go, nothing. Right? Everything's just fine. Yes, what have you found? Right. But you say, and you look at them and say, no, I can tell by your behavior that everything's not fine. They say, what do you mean? Everything's fine. I'm not going to talk about it anymore. Yes, but how do you, what do you do when a person, you know, you see a person, they seem to be upset about something, and you ask them, and they say, no, everything's fine. What do you do? How do you learn? Pardon? You project? Well, that's not such a good idea. Yes, you could do that. You sit with it. Go on about that. Mm-hmm. So maybe you have to do that, too. Yes. Milton Erickson was very good at this. And there's one of the more extreme cases, which and recorded is that he was working in a mental health institution, and there was one person in the ward who just spoke gibberish and would speak nothing else. And so he couldn't get any information about his experience, and none of the staff knew how to work with him or whatever. And so Milton Erickson when he's leaning against the windowsill or something, he'd just go over and lean against the windowsill with him. And as he talked in gibberish, Milton Erickson would listen very carefully. And after a while, he would start speaking in the same gibberish. And just, you know, and this went on for several months. And after several months, the guy finally turned to him and said, "You know, you're the only person here who makes sense." And so it started to open up. And sometimes working with patterns can be like that. So this is where the patience. And one of the things that I suggest is rather than you opening to the pattern, which many times is effective, but when that's not working, then you just sit down and let the pattern open to you. And what you're doing is applying attention. You're just there in attention. And you let the pattern open to you, which may take, 5 minutes, 5 hours, 5 years, but it doesn't really matter. Okay. Sorry. Things. Well, it may be because you're resting more than you're used to, just resting quietly, so things jar. But as you continue to do that, you notice the startle reaction. Stay in the startle. It's like, ah. And you may find that interesting. Okay? Franca. Sounds good to me. Well, I was a different person then. No. Oh, no, it's absolutely the Tibetan. It's very dramatic language. Well, Taranga Rinpoche visited the center I was running in L.A. And we set up a small program which is very unusual for those times. You know, people would meditate and they'd actually have a meditation interview with someone like Taranga Rinpoche. And I just had people doing resting with the breath. And they'd come and talk to Taranga Rinpoche. Taranga Rinpoche had given very helpful instruction. I was translating for this. And at the end of this, Taranga Rinpoche looked at me and said, "Your people, when they rest with the breath, they actually rest with the breath, don't they?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "That never worked in Tibet. They just went to sleep. That's why we have them saying mantras." Now, in our practice, most of you, pretty well all of you really, when distraction arises, when disturbances arise, you don't get carried away with them. And you certainly notice this in the interviews. If any of you are just getting carried away by them all the time, you're not telling me. So, as soon as a disturbance arises, you're on top of it. Okay? Jump on them. Right? Yeah. So that's what you're all doing. Now, it's not like jumping off the roof onto, you know, something, or jumping off a horse and wrestling a cow to the ground or anything like that. Round them up. Well, I'm delighted to be let off the hook so easily on that one. Isolate them. Crush them. Well, how do you crush a thought? Yes. Like sumo. You want my attention? You've got it. And what happens? Right? No?
You're right.
Well, thank you for reminding me. Alicia, in my room there's a book called Tales of the Dervishes. Oh, absolutely, it does not mean to suppress emotions or suppress. It means really bring your attention right to it. Oh, I think so, because most lay Tibetans, certainly, and a very good number of monastics, knew nothing about practice. I mean, from a practice point of view, all of you are very, very experienced compared to the average Tibetan monastic. I'm not kidding. Note Tales of the Dervishes. Not Nasruddin, that's for later. When instruction is given in the Tibetan tradition, you say, just go and do this, and people would just go off and do the liturgy and recite the mantra, and they would not do anything else. The thoughts came through their head or emotions came through, they would just sit there. You know, with a prayer wheel, mala, and just do that. And there would be absolutely no attempt to focus the mind or what have you. And that was very, very widespread. So the idea of actually, okay, and they would rest, their attitude to practice was, my Lama told me to do this, so I just do this, and everything, I will get enlightened. That's it. Well, yeah, but they wouldn't do anything in their practice. There wouldn't be any energy. That's why Trungpa said they'd just go to sleep. So the idea of actively engaging what arises and bringing attention to it in a very alive way, that's what I think Kongtrul's speaking to. I don't know. I didn't live in 19th century Eastern Tibet, but that's my guess. Okay? Well, I'd like to call it the direct awareness approach. Yeah, that's right. Maybe that's what we'll call it. No. This is very much out of my own practice. So you're guinea pigs. As most people are who attend retreats with me. Thank you. Yes, Guy?
It seems like a combination. It seems like it has elements of the ecstasy practice.
Yeah.
Give
the primary practice is an ecstasy practice.
To give energy to the Tathagata.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But this notion, you see, the principle here is rather than working with an object on which you're projecting an emotion, you are working directly with the emotion. That's the difference. Yeah. Yeah. That's why I thought it would be interesting to explore. Pat? That's a non-standard application of the classical approach. In that, and it's a method that I have found very effective for a large number of people in a lot of different situations. When someone is alienated from their own feelings for whatever reason, often trauma or abuse, where you've got really very painful stuff stored in the body and it's been very strongly suppressed for long periods of time, it can be quite difficult for people to get in touch with that. And so they can do the classical method with stuff coming and going with all people, but this stuff's still in them and still driving their reactivity. So sometimes just to imagine yourself in front of you and do taking, sending with you, and take this in, and gradually it opens up, and it's in the same way that we're talking, respecting Newton's question, you're letting the patterns open to you. And another application, I discussed this briefly in Wake Up to Your Life, is when people have difficulty getting in touch with older material themselves, they imagine themselves as a young child in front of them and do taking and sending with that child, and some people find this really opens things up. And as I said, I think I mentioned this the other day, but in doing those techniques, I think it's very important to be in touch with a person about whom you can talk about your experience. It's not something I generally recommend people do completely on their own, because you're going to open up a lot of psychological material, generally speaking. Okay? Okay, Jean, Judy, and then Deborah. I think so. It's definitely building on the experience we've had in the earlier part of this retreat. I think if I'd introduced this technique at the beginning of this retreat, you'd be sort of going, huh? But I will explore this terminology, compassion for yourself. Is that what the compassion's actually directed at? No, not of patterns either. The compassion arises as a response to what? Suffering. To the suffering. So it's not compassion for yourself, it's compassion arising as the natural response to the suffering which you're aware of, you're experiencing. But this is very important. You can't have compassion for yourself. It doesn't make any sense. But compassion arises in, compassion is the response to the perception of the destructiveness of suffering. Right. But that's an important distinction. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I think so, yes. Right. Judy. I suggest that you work just on maintaining the field in walking meditation and in the work period before trying to introduce the taking and sending. I think there isn't a strong enough foundation. Well, but that's what I'm saying. Rather than trying to do taking and sending in the work period, do focus, which is, you know, if you're watering, say, there's the focus on the hose, water, field, just open to the whole sensory experience, and work with that for a while, and then when you can, include the internal material, and then you find yourself experiencing presence as you're watering, which could be interesting. And when you have that stabilized in action, you know, because you're now mixing it with activity, then you may be able to incorporate the taking and sending with that. But it sounds to me that there isn't a strong enough foundation when you're mixing the practice with activity. Paula? Okay. Deborah? Well, if those things are taking place, you learn to include them. So that when you train in that practice, you can actually maintain it while you're walking. You can actually do it while you're driving. It gets a little tricky because every now and then you start really just getting off on the rain on your windshield, which is not such a good idea. It's very interesting to do this in meetings so that you, even when you're speaking to one person, you are including everybody in your attention. That introduces a very different dynamic. So this has a lot of application. Okay? Right, now let's turn to our text. Oh, page 36. Or 37, really. In certain of these, three objects, three poisons, three seeds of virtue, and it's very straightforward in this approach. It's just right there. But if we look at page top of, and then use maxims to train in all forms of activity, that's not such a useful thing in this approach because that takes you back into the conceptual mind. Yes? Begin the sequence of take. I was just going to skip that one. Because. No, I didn't skip it before at all. Why? Because you are one with your experience. It's all you. Right? You don't like that. Oh, another person's going to talk to me outside. I'm feeling about like D'Artagnan now. Now he comes to Paris and he runs into one person and gets into a fight and another one. So he's got this series of duels at 6 o'clock the next morning. Okay. When misfortunes fill the world and its inhabitants, make adversity the path of awakening. Now what happens with this approach, with this line? Well, the first thing is, when things are going wrong in your life, what's the first step here? Exactly. Move right into the experience. You know, it's all going wrong, or there's a conflict. Don't try to resolve anything. Don't try to figure anything out. Just experience it. And going through the primary practice, you know, you focus, feel, and then internal material, and when things are going wrong, when there's a lot of trouble, there's usually a fair amount of internal material there. So one may have to make some efforts at that point. And then you find yourself just present. And even that much changes your experience. But now you're right in it, and you start working with any sense of imbalance, anything that arises as other. And when there's a lot of adversity, there's usually quite a few candidates for other. Okay? drive all blame into one. What's the one here? I think that's close. Yeah, separation. Yes? Yeah. Yeah. And when you open to that, what do you experience? Coming into the experience of whatever's arising. No separation. That's what, when we went going through this before, you know. Yes, I'm responsible for everything. And now you're in it. Oh? So it's the sense of separation. So everything in one's practice comes down to counteracting or undoing those tendencies in us which produce separation, which is precisely reactivity. And the fundamental pattern of separation is attachment to a sense of self. But in terms of direct awareness, it's really the sense of separation. Okay?
Yes. Yeah. Direct awareness, what is the mechanism of a direct awareness?
I haven't got a clue. I mean, basically, I'm thinking about this as taking and sending from a Dzogchen Mahamudra point of view, you know. But I keep emphasizing it's an exploration. Be grateful to everyone. I would alter that now to be grateful to everything. Everything that you experience. Why? Pardon? It's what's there. And what does experiencing do for you? Maybe that's what we're working to counteract. Pardon? Yeah. Everything that you experience wakes you up. Now, one of the ways you can explore this in walking meditation this evening, I've mentioned this to a few of you, when you're walking, rather than imagining or feeling that you're putting your foot on the ground, feel that the earth is rising or the wood here is rising to support you. And as your weight comes onto it, it actually just supports you. So there's almost an alive interaction between you and the floor, or between your foot and the floor. And when you approach things that way, then what you actually experience becomes alive in a certain sense. Because it's receiving you and your attention, and there's almost like a kind of response, and that alive quality. Jean? Oh, sorry. Okay. And when you feel that, a lot of people, that's why they like going out into nature, because that's what happens spontaneously. But it really doesn't depend on nature. It depends on how you're approaching experience.
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.